This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 209. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike. You're going to leave that in, aren't you?
Of course I am. My name is John.
Well, the audio seems a bit better this week, so I think we won't have all those odd pauses like last week.
Fingers crossed.
Hey, speaking of another podcast, have you been listening to Fake Doctors, Real Friends?
No, long story short, I kind of can't right now, but I listened to half of the first episode and I absolutely loved it because I loved hearing like their auditions and the behind the scenes stuff, or, you know, the fact that Greg Berlanti, that was the first show that he did was Scrubs, and now he's done all this other good stuff. And yeah.
Well, they had Bill Lawrence on, and they've had Sarah Chalk on, and it's a fun show. It is a good show. It's very, very entertaining, especially if you like Scrubs. You get a lot of the insider stuff and behind-the-scenes stuff. But they had Bill Lawrence on, and what was hilarious is at the end of the episode, he was just like, "This was awesome. I can't wait for us to do this again." He goes, "Hey, if you ever come across like a problem where you have a question and you don't know the answer, just say, 'Hey, Bill,' you know, and then ask the question. And then send me the question and I'll record myself answering and I'll send the audio to your producer so they can cut it into that spot." And they're like, "Oh, okay." And they've been doing it. It's hilarious. Nice. Like they've legit been doing it. And so like, they'll be like, what was that? I don't know. Hey, Bill, what was the guy that da da da? Hey guys. It's funny. It's amazing because it's like, you really get a sense of the family this cast was together, how they were together and everything. And even with, you know, Bill Lawrence, like kind of being that family with them as well, and how much they kind of miss each other. And it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. And they do a great job with it. And they do this thing. They do, they take a phone call every week from a fan. And the way they do the phone call is you email in that you'd like to be one of the people that calls in, and then they will, if you get chosen, they'll email you and say, "Okay, well, you need to be available. Are you available on this date and time to call in?" And you, it's a Zoom meeting. So you go in and you kind of like video with them and you can ask, they'll talk to, I mean, like sometimes the phoning guest is on the show 10, 15 minutes as they answer a couple questions and kind of joke around and shoot the shit with them. And it all depends on how their questions generate stories. So it's a real fun listen.
Nice. Like I said, I listened to half of the first one and I really do like it. I like those guys. I like their chemistry. So yeah, I'm sure I will be listening to more of it.
Yeah.
Along those lines, did you see, and again, I've only watched the very first part of it. Josh Gad got the cast of Goonies together today via video chat.
No.
Yeah. You got to check this out after the podcast tonight. I only watched the first part because it was the end of my work day and I was logging off, but it was funny because he goes, he's like, "So I just got to ask you right off the bat here, like, what have you guys been doing in the quarantine? Like what have you been up to?" And they all go, "What do you mean? We've been doing nothing like everybody else. What are you talking about?"
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, he got Andy, he got, Martha Plimpton there, you know, Data was there, Corey Feldman was there, like it was Josh cool. Brolin. Yeah, James Brolin, Sean Astin. Yeah. It was his dad. What's that?
James was his dad. It was Josh.
Oh yeah, sorry.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I will definitely have to check that out.
So, Mike.
Yeah.
What'd you watch this week?
Stuff and things, you know. Hey, apparently, I'm sorry, I'm reading about this now. Apparently, by the end of the call, they got Steven Spielberg to call in as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They also got Richard Donner called in and Chris Columbus.
Damn.
With the rest of the cast at the end.
Now I'm definitely going to have to check out the rest of that.
And then Steven Spielberg chatted about a sequel.
Stop it.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe they get their kids.
Steven Spielberg goes, how are you going to find seven miserable kids like this again that are new and fresh? That's all.
It's
apparently
true.
The cast reenact scenes from the movie as well as discuss memories about it. Oh, I got to find this.
Yeah. Yep. That's going to be definitely a fun thing to watch.
Oh, hell yeah, that is. That's awesome. Thanks for letting me know about that. I'm going to, as soon as we're done, I'm probably going to queue that up to watch that bad boy.
Yep. It's the Goonies.
It's funny because I've really been thinking about a lot of 80s movies as of late.
Yep.
And me and my, I guess, cousin-in-law, Jason, he's been really, so we've been messaging each other like, hey, do you remember this? Hey, do you remember that? And, you know, like we were talking about most recently the conversation led towards Quicksilver.
Yes.
You remember the Kevin Bacon bike messenger flick?
Of course I do.
Yeah, and of course, so he brought Quicksilver up, and then whatever reason, I started thinking about Gleaming the Cube.
Oh, Jesus.
Which was, right? Like, and then License to Drive.
With the and Heather Graham. My first experience with Heather Graham is Mercedes. Oh.
Yep.
Holy God.
He brought up one that I can't remember ever hearing about, and I want to ask you if you'd heard Thrashing.
Yes, I never watched it, but I know of it, yes.
Okay, it's a skateboarding flick with Josh Brolin. I've never seen it either, and it's not on, though someone has it on YouTube in like 8 parts, but it's not streaming anywhere. I think you can rent it for like $4 or $5, depending on, you know, on a site here or there, but he has the DVD, so I'm going to borrow that from him when this is over. But like all these weird movies start coming up, like all these 80s flicks we're talking about lately, but... So, of course, I started thinking, you know, Josh Brolin and Thrash, and I'm like, oh, that must have been right after Goonies, and it was, you know, because he looked pretty much the same, and now this Goonies thing, so it's just kind of funny. But, yeah, no, that's awesome. I did watch a movie this week. I didn't watch any new movies, so I'll just tell you straight away. I watched Star Wars A New Hope, VHS, the original theatrical cut with my son on Friday night.
Yeah.
VCR, and he really enjoyed it and got a kick out of it. And been a while since I'd seen the movie beginning to end, so that was fun.
How was the tape quality?
Good. Standard VHS tape quality, you know.
How did it show up on your TV? Like, was it stretched out?
Okay, here's the funny thing. It's the letterbox edition.
Okay.
So... it had the black bars on the top and the bottom. And then because it was formatted for the old style 4:3 TV, it had the black bars on the left and the right. However, if you take the TV, like you can have options for the picture size of typically of like normal, auto, stretch, and zoom. And if you put it on zoom, it fit perfect. It still had the letterbox on the top and the bottom, but the sides fit perfect. And if you were to go look at it for on normal and then switch to zoom, it didn't cut any of the screen off whatsoever.
Well, that's good.
And it looked good. So, I mean, like it was letterbox on my screen. But yeah, it's 4:3 format. So it's in letterbox 4:3 format. So it was actually something I hadn't considered when it came to watching some old VHS tapes was that, you know, these movies that are in widescreen on DVD now, and they are in widescreen in the theaters, on home video, they were formatted down to 4:3 unless you bought widescreen or letterbox edition VHSs. So I think, you know, it's something I hadn't considered, but it's like, oh, I guess that makes perfect sense, you know?
That's the first thing I considered. I remember setting those up in the video store, you know, setting up the displays that, like, Face Off was a famous one. And they were like, you know, here's what you're seeing, and here's what you could be seeing if you were watching the letterbox widescreen.
Yes, yes. And that was the thing. I hadn't really thought about it a whole lot, but then it's like, oh, you look at the back. I remember even looking at the back of the DVDs, and they showing, oh, you have full screen and, you know, widescreen editions, and it shows you what it cuts off.
Yep.
Like in the little picture and little image and everything. But no, it was fun. You know, it looked good on the screen. Even when it had the black bars all the way around, it looked fine, you know, but it looked good on the screen, and it was just fun to watch the flick.
Nice.
Yeah. What'd you watch?
Well, if we're doing movies right off, I'll just say that I watched a couple of older ones as well. The other day I was playing my online D&D game with my friends, and I usually have the TV on in the background because sometimes, you know, you're not doing anything. So I just kind of watch what's going on. And apparently Showtime was having an Arnold Schwarzenegger marathon.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There is nothing wrong with that. And I happen to come in at the beginning of, and then get to watch the entire thing in the background of The Sixth Day. And let me tell you, that is an underrated movie that really holds up.
Yep.
And surprising number of people in there that were stars. Like Michael Rooker looked so young, and he had hair. And he got second top billing next to Schwarzenegger. You know, Michael Rapaport was in there. It was a great flick.
Isn't Robert Duvall in that flick as well?
Robert Duvall's in there. Oh God, I want to say Michael Dorman. It's not. He was in Blade, you know, and as the bad guy in Blade. Stephen Dorff. There we go. Stephen Dorff was in there. You know, back when he was actually doing stuff and wasn't just doing commercials for, you know, electronic cigarettes.
Terry Crews is in that.
Terry Crews was in that as one of the, it was like, I kept seeing these people going, oh my God, it's them. It was a solid flick about, you know, cloning and memory wipes. And yeah, it was just, I really enjoyed it. So that was fun.
What was the second flick?
The second one was one. So Evan Goldberg has made a bunch of movies with, you know, his boys, like, hold on, my cat.
You only watched one Schwarzenegger flick?
Well, after that it was Total Recall, and
that's another great flick.
Oh, it is absolutely. But I only got to see part of that because then the game ended and I had to go do stuff. So
okay.
But the other one was. It's an Evan Goldberg movie that I had never fully seen. And every time I see it come on, it's always on like FX or something. And I knew that it would be chopped up and edited, so I've never watched it. The other day it was on sale on Amazon for $5. So I picked it up. It's called This Is the End.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Where basically the world ends. But the unique thing about it is that all these actors play themselves. So you got Seth Rogen as Seth Rogen, Jay Baruchel as Jay Baruchel, James Franco. And it was a long movie. It was longer than I expected it to be. Like, it just kept going. But essentially, the end of the world happens. The rapture happens. And these guys are all stuck on Earth. And they're holed up in James Franco's house. And it was interesting. I won't say that it was hilariously funny. It was dark. And there were some funny parts to it. I enjoyed watching it. I probably wouldn't go back and watch it repeatedly. But... you know, I enjoyed it for the most part.
So you're familiar with Quentin Tarantino and his Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2, and you know how the movies are so long, so we cut into two parts, right?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Well, we went to the theaters and saw both parts, so I think you've seen it. So apparently, a couple of years after that, he did a cut called The Whole Bloody Affair, which he put the whole movie together. You know, he took out a couple things, like at the end of the first one where Bill says to the French aide of Oren Ishii, like, well, does she know her daughter's alive?
Right.
And then he says it again at the beginning of volume two. But anyhow, so they cut that out and this and that. Well, apparently he put it out there in Sundance, and he's aired it at his theater a couple of times, but he hasn't, it's never been released. And so evidently there's a guy on eBay selling a copy called The Whole Bloody Affair. And he sells it with custom artwork and blah, blah, blah. And it's like $30 if you buy it with the case, or it's like $15 if you buy it with just the disc alone. And then like I put it as a watch, and then he sent me like, you know, a 40% off thing. So I bought it. And evidently what he did was, it's a bootleg, and I'm surprised it's being sold on eBay, and eBay hasn't taken it down yet, but it's a bootleg. And what he did was, is he took like, because I guess in the UK and in Japan, there are certain scenes they added to the DVD releases over there. Specifically, the crazy 88 scene where she has the big samurai fight with everybody and kills yep. everybody. It's in black and white in our version.
Right.
Because they had to do that because of all the blood and everything. Well, in Japan, it's in full-blown color. Also, in the UK, the animation scene is longer and more violent. So nice. The guy cut the movie together with like a UK version and a Japan version and the US versions and on and on and on. And he made a version of The Whole Bloody Affair based on some reviews of the original and a real big breakdown of it and everything to make sure he put all the stuff in it that was in this big cut. And it's one long 4-hour movie now. So I started watching that. I haven't finished it. Because it's 4 hours, but I'm more than halfway through. But I started watching it, and I don't know. I just like his movies, and it's just an interesting. I mean, I don't feel like because that Crazy 88 scene was in color that it really was like, oh, okay, this is definitely way better. No, I think it's good either way, personally. But I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting, so I've watched half of that.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But shows and stuff.
Shows and stuff.
Seeing how we already talked movies. Zoe's Playlist. Still kind of a guilty pleasure show for me.
I don't feel guilty about it at all. I fucking love this show.
This week's episode, I really, really, really loved the opening of her two love interests there singing Here I Go Again.
Yes. You
know, as soon as the left elevator closed, the right elevator opens, and you know, the other guy steps out and he's singing. I thought that was absolutely phenomenal.
Yep. Loved it.
It was a good episode. Once again, her dad was getting worse and Zoe lost her mind in this one, right?
Yeah, this one was actually called Zoe's Extraordinary Outburst because of that. But yeah, she kind of blew up at Simon and, you know, called him a coward and told him to basically, you know, shit her off the pot and knock it off and quit whining all the time. Yeah, your dad's dead, blah, blah, blah. And yeah.
He was like, who are you to judge me and how I mourn?
Yeah. He's like, is there an expiration date on mourning? I liked when Mo came over, though, and grabbed them both and just cranked up the music and made them, you know, dance, essentially. Just
dance, yeah.
Violently thrash around and get it out of your system.
Which I enjoyed that they both went for it.
Yeah. And really got into it.
Yeah. No, I enjoy the show. We have only a couple episodes left, I think, for this season.
A lot of shows are like that right now. I was noticing that there's a number of them that are going to be ending shortly. Like, you know, what we just watched, the sixth episode of Westworld. There's only 8 episodes total. So
only 2 left. Yeah. And the 7th one aired last night.
And you and I just finished Hunters this week. So that one's done with.
It's funny because it's ironic because I actually heard people talking about that this morning. It's like, there's no live sports on right now, which sucks because people love sports. But like, this is supposed to be the end of the hockey season, going into the Stanley Cup. This is supposed to be going to the NBA playoffs. and you know, Sweet 16 was supposed to happen last month, and the baseball season was supposed to be kicking off. We're supposed to be over a month into the new baseball season and everything. There's no live sports, and TV shows aren't filming, and all of these TV shows are coming to an end because they're running out of new episodes.
Right.
It's going to be odd not having new shows, I guess.
It's actually going to be really odd.
Yeah. And also, another oddity, I guess, or uniqueness of all this is the fact that they can't make stuff. And like, Bridgeton Twin Drive, and it posted the other day, like, hey, you know, when we get the green light that we're allowed to open again, you know, we've looked into it, and there's no, like, all the Hollywood movies have been pulled until like July. So there's really nothing, even if theaters open today, there's nothing that people are going to be going to see because there's going to be nothing playing except old movies. So what do you guys want to watch?
Yeah. I saw an article and I thought it was a joke. It said, you know, the five movies we're looking forward to watching this summer. I'm like, seriously? Like what? This week I had nothing for trailers, and I realized that's because there's nothing new coming out.
Quibi, the 3 days, the 90-day promotional thing expires. And I'm like, do I want to bother? Do I not want to bother? I mean, I got enough old stuff I could watch, like rerun stuff. And like, I still have to catch up on Supernatural. I'm a season and a half behind. And I would like to finish the show just because I had, you know, invested so much time into it. So maybe that's a good time to do it now. But I don't know. There's plenty of stuff we've never watched out there. Like there's a new show on Amazon, that 000. I think I'm going to check that out. Have you seen anything about that?
I have not, but I know that there's another one coming out in May that I want to see, which is, I can't remember. I think it's got one of the Amell brothers in it, though. I think it's got Robbie Amell.
Okay.
So, yeah. I was thinking about that today.
What?
I was thinking, like, oh, God, these shows are ending. But, you know, we've said that before, and we've never had a problem with, you know.
Yeah, we haven't. 000 is a series that follows the troubled journey of a large shipment of cocaine from Monterey, Mexico to Italy. And I've heard it's 8 episodes. I've heard a whole lot of good about it. It's got an international cast and, yeah. And actually, it hit Amazon in February, I think.
Okay. Wait, next February?
No, this past February.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, this past February, I think it was. So.
The one I'm thinking about is called Upload, and it is Robbie Amell, and...
Yes.
It says, turns out there is life after death in the form of a virtual holiday.
Yes.
Robbie Amell is a coder named Nathan, who has suffered fatal injuries after a car crash, has his consciousness transferred into the heavenly digital resort Lakeview. I want to check that out.
Yeah, I kind of heard about that one as well. So, but yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Well, you know, the Peacock, that network's coming out, and they got new shows they can launch. So.
Yep. And there will be a free version of Peacock.
Oh, really?
You'll have to deal with commercials. That's the way I understand it. There'll be a free version. And I believe it also doesn't have all of their stuff available on it. So, of course, you know, you'll get some of the basic shows, and then you won't be able to get the ones you really want. So that'll entice you to... Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Pay for the upgrade.
Early availability for Xfinity Flex customers began on April 15th, but the rest of us, May 1st, apparently, or something. No. July 15th, 2020.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's not really that far, but...
No, Xfinity gets free. Gets the free service, you know, the free initial whatever. Oh, I see. It says it'll have two tiers, both of which will be supported by ads, limited to 5 minutes per hour, and by default, Peacock Free, which will be available at no charge to all U.S. internet users, but with reduced program lineup and Peacock Premium, which will be included at no charge to subscribers for participating TV service providers of Xfinity and Cox. And then it'll be $5 a month for others. Peacock Premium, whether included through their provider or paid separately, can be upgraded to an ad-free version for an additional $5 for a month. So for $10 a month, you can get ad-free in all their shows that are going to be on it.
I mean, on the one hand, $10 a month isn't much, but on the other hand, when you're already paying for Hulu and Netflix and, you know, whatever else you've got, it adds up.
Oh, and if you're paying for cable on top of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, like right now I got Hulu and Netflix and Hulu, Netflix, WWE Network, New Japan World. I think, yeah, those are only three I'm paying for monthly and have been for quite a while. And then, like, I just did a free month of Shudder and a free month of CBS All Access. I already canceled those to make sure I didn't get billed.
Yep.
But, you know, occasionally I might do a free month of this or a free month of that. Or, hey, speaking of free, did you see U.S. Cellular? Because you don't have it anymore, but U.S. Cellular is offering all their customers unlimited data for free until end of July.
Well, that's nice of them.
Yeah, so if you have a plan that's not unlimited data, then you get unlimited data for free through the end of the month. If you have a plan that's unlimited data, you'll keep paying us. No discount for you. But still.
Nice. So
it was good. Yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
I forgot to say this last week, but I'm now up to episode 3 of Homecoming. Have you started watching this yet?
I have not.
It's very interesting because, like I said, you get the fast forwards to, you know, what's happening now, and it's all shot, like I said, basically on an iPhone in portrait mode.
Yeah.
And it's filmed in the style of like an 80s thriller movie. It's really hard to describe, but, you know, the music is very intense and there'll be scenes with no dialogue for like 3, 4, 5 minutes. And it's really interesting. Julia Roberts' character, like, we get to see her in the flashbacks administering like drugs and therapy sessions to these basically veterans who have come back. And, when we see her in the flash forwards, you know, the modern times, she doesn't seem to remember anything that happened there. Like, she's trying to, she goes to her, third episode, we got to see her in a flashback with her boyfriend at the time. And she basically tells him that her work's more important and he needs to move out. Get out of my house. I don't want you around. Cause he's like telling her, you know, your work is everything and it's taking up all your time. So she kicks him out. Then in the same episode, when we see her in the flash forward, she meets up with him and she's asking him, like, did I ever talk about work? Did I ever say anything? Did I mention any names? Because she seems to have had her memory wiped of it.
Huh.
It's still that's just a big mystery as to what's going on.
That's sort of interesting.
Yeah.
A little creepy, but sort of interesting.
Yeah. So what was a good show that you watched this week?
Modern Love was very interesting this week.
Mm.
Slow burn. Talking about Netflix. I mean, Amazon. Take Me As I Am, Whoever I Am.
Yep.
With Anne Hathaway and Gary Carr. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, Anne Hathaway's character, Lexi, she starts out, she's filling an online dating application. And she's kind of struggling. And then she sees, like, a peach, which it turns out to be a wooden peach on the counter. And then she just goes on, like, you know, verbal diarrhea diatribe, typing in this whole story of what we find out is that she is bipolar.
Yep.
And very, while we're watching it, she doesn't tell us she is until the end almost. But it was a really interesting story. It was I'm still trying to figure out why this is TVMA, because we've watched the first 3 episodes and there's, I think maybe someone said the fuck. But there's been no nudity. There's been no graphicness. So I'm curious as to why it's TVMA still.
Yeah, I can't figure that one out either.
Yeah.
I was sure that I wasn't going to like this episode. I love Anne Hathaway, despite a lot of people not liking her. But
I was
going to like this episode because, like you said, she starts off filling out the dating profile and she's like she's narrating it in her head and she's typing away and she's like, so like, I don't know how to do this. See, I have a thing. I mean, it's not a big thing. It's just a little, well, it's not really a little thing. It's like a medium thing, but it's a thing. And I was like, oh my God, I hate her. I want to kill her. And because she was just kind of like playing it off like she was just this ditzy. And then seeing her little dance number thing where she's going to the grocery store first thing in the morning in that sequin dress because, you know, she'd been out all night because she doesn't sleep. And seeing all the people like dancing behind her, I was like, what is going on here? This is crazy. And then once when she got back from the grocery store and laid down in bed and just laid there, I was like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. And it got a lot more riveting.
Well, it's funny because she gets home and then you see it, like it hits her like a ton of bricks and her face changes and her shoulders shrug. And then the narrative is she's just like, and then it hits me and I don't know why it does. And it just, and she's, you know, giving us a play by play of how her body's reacting. And like you said, yeah, then she's in bed and then the guy calls and they're supposed to go on a date tonight. She's like, oh, we're going on a date. Okay, let's still go. And then they go have the worst, not like the worst date as in all these bad things happen, but like they go eat and she has Mucilix.
Yeah.
Isn't that cereal?
It's like the grossest oatmeal kind of thing.
Yeah. And then he's like, all right, well, I guess I'll go. No, let's go get ice cream. And he's like, oh, okay. And then they're sitting there and
you're
she's
even
like,
giving her more. You're giving her more life and energy in your description than she actually has. It's like, you want to get
fair enough, but I've never seen someone eat ice cream so sad and depressed before.
Yeah.
But it was funny because while we're watching this, while Kate and I are watching this, I never once thought bipolar. I just thought there's something wrong with her. You know, there's definitely something wrong. And then when she finally goes, I have bipolar, Kate and I at the same time, both of them like, oh, okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, my favorite part of this entire episode is when she has because like when she's in the supermarket, they're doing a little dance number behind her and the lighting is different on the show because she's in a big happy mood. And then she talks about being like, I don't know if it was Rhoda or Mary Tyler Moore, but they mimicked like the opening credits to like a 70s TV show. She's walking through New York City and Judd Hirsch played three different characters.
Yep. Because of course it's Judd Hirsch.
Credits. Yeah. I thought that was awesome. Cause he played like a taxi driver and then like a street fruit vendor, magazine vendor, whatever. And then he was the police officer. So I loved that. But, I'm kind of glad at the end, though, she didn't end up with the guy that she had that couple dates on. Like, she didn't end up telling him what was going on. He was like, oh, I'll accept you who you are. Because it seems more realistic that didn't happen.
Yes. Yep.
You know?
Yeah, it's almost like we just got a snapshot of her. You know, we didn't get to see her complete it. We didn't get to see her find a happily ever after. It's like, now she's on the next stage.
So we got, I'm looking forward to the next episode because I did see Tina Fey's in it.
Oh, nice.
And she's comical.
Oh, she is.
So, Schooled.
Mm-hmm.
This week's episode, what the hell was this week's episode?
What about Earth Day?
Oh, the Earth Day one,
and,
yeah.
And CB can't. You know, get past the first date because he's a nerd.
Right. And superlatives. It was all about superlatives as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mellor tells CB that he's immature and that he scares girls off because he has like bumper stickers on his car. One says, I don't know. The other one says the other car is my Batmobile or something. And
I so break for Velociraptors was the first one.
Yes. Break for Velociraptors. That's right. So he needs to act more grown up. And then Glassman watches what, Volcano.
Yes.
Yeah, Glass watches Volcano. And so he's like, we got to do something to save the planet. So he wants to make William Penn more friendly. So he brings in Paloma, and she's trying to, like, you know, save the planet. And then Mellor wants to build a new baseball stadium. It's finally been approved. He's been waiting 5 years, but they find, like, this endangered bird there, and they have to do a study. And so they go to do, like a hearing, a mock hearing about it with the board. And of course, Mellor, I like, what's her faces? What's the girl star of the show? What's her name?
Lainey.
Jeez, I'm crow. Lainey's doing the narrative, like, so what does Mellor do? Screams patriotism at him. And yep. He's like, America and apple pie and baseball, eat some pie. And then a flag unfolds behind him, and everyone just loves it. And then Paloma gets up to do her presentation. It's scientific, and there's PowerPoints or actually slides, and no one gives a shit. And then CB comes out and does a magic show and converts even Mellor, who now has to save these birds because it's America. And they can just refurbish the old stadium. And I don't know. So CB gets the girl by being himself. So I guess at the end of the day, we learn to just be yourself.
Yeah, I could draw some comparisons. I can relate to that. I've struggled in the past with being myself when I have tried to impress the ladies, as it were.
I think that's one of the things that benefited me with Kate, is I decided to not put up a front or not be myself with her, and not let those little things go unsaid, like I did for so long before. I think that might have helped.
But like your first date, you told her that you're a huge wrestling fan and a Star Wars nerd, and.
Well, no, I didn't tell her that immediately on a first date. I mean, but what I mean is, I didn't try to act differently.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, I just was just myself, and if something naturally came up. Then, you know, like if Star Wars would have come, I'm just like, and she would have been like, Star Wars is dumb. I'd be like, well, you're dumb. Star Wars is awesome. That's what I mean.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I was recently told by somebody that they could never date me because I don't drink. I don't consider it a problem, but it was just very interesting to hear those words.
That's probably not someone you want to date anyways, then.
No. I just, it's always interesting to hear the reasoning or the words behind things.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, she's like, yeah, I could never date somebody who doesn't drink. I'm like, well, congratulations. At least you know what you want.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I remember when you went through your drinking phase. I used quote fingers, but you can't see me.
Yeah. And that was because I was just out of a well over 10-year relationship and said, if I'm going to date, I'm going to need to at least pretend that I know how to drink. So I'm going to have to go to the bars and drink some stuff.
And what was hilarious is you didn't drink at home at all.
Nope.
You didn't practice at home. You just only drank like at the bar.
Yep.
Cause I remember like, go ahead.
I was going to say, and I never once got drunk, like ever.
Because I remember going down to the Liberal Cup, and we sat there, and you had whatever you had, and I had a beer. And we sat there, and it was like, wow, this is the first time we've ever had a drink together. And you're like, does it feel odd to you? I'm like, yeah, it does. It feels really odd. It feels unnatural.
Yeah. And now I just don't do it again.
Well, see, I appreciate a good beer every once in a while, but I myself have not. I maybe drink six a year because I literally have one once in a great, great while.
Right.
So, yeah.
Interesting world.
Yep.
But the other part of yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, the superlatives, which for those who don't know or they're saying, I know that word. It's basically those things in the yearbook where it's like most likely to succeed, class clown, most pretty, stuff like that. And they're always done for just the seniors in the yearbook. It's, you know, you look forward to that your whole 4 years of high school or whatever. Some people do. Some people don't, because, you know, there are some that could be considered negative, and that's what was, they were dealing with here. You know, Wilma tried to counsel a girl who was scared that she was going to get most quiet, and she didn't want to be known for that. And it really bothered her that she was so quiet, and that's how everyone was going to remember her, and she didn't want that. But then, you know, Wilma started to stand up for her, but then Lainey had made it so that teachers could now get superlatives as well, and Wilma broke into the office and found out that she was going to get coolest teacher, and suddenly she liked superlatives again and thought that it was cool, and she kind of lost sight of things. But it turns out that, you know, she was in, when she was in school, she was like the most studious or something like that, basically the nerd, and so it was nice to feel popular for once.
I want to add that I hated the end where they gave everybody a fucking trophy.
Yeah.
Everyone got a superlative or something, and it's like, boo.
Yeah. That's not what they wanted. You know, that's
right.
The girl like smiled when they were like, oh, the most likely to speak up and save the planet is her. And she's smiling. I'm like, no, that's not what she wanted. She didn't want superlatives. Right. She wanted them taken away so that they didn't single people out.
Exactly. So I had a little bit of an issue with that one.
Yeah.
Do we really only have like a couple shows left to talk about? Because I completely fucking forgot to watch the second episode of Killing Eve now that I'm saying it out loud.
Well, we've got Killing Eve. Nope. I'm going to list off the shows that we have to watch. Tales from the Loop.
Nope.
Okay. Hunters.
Yes.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes.
Flash.
Yep.
Blacklist.
Yep. I watched two episodes of Blacklist.
And
Westworld. What We Do in the Shadows.
And What We Do in the Shadows. Yep. Okay. I had a couple other shows in there.
I did forget to watch Killing Eve.
Tragic.
And I want to watch Tales from the Loop, but I queued it up the other night and I went, oh, first episode's 57 minutes. And then I'm like, it's based on a painting. Like this TV show is based on paintings by a guy.
Yeah. I've seen two episodes now. I like it. The second, they're both Twilight Zone-ish or Black Mirror-ish.
See, that sells more.
But they're tied into each other because they all take place in this one town where there's a thing that goes on underneath the town called the Loop. And it's basically like a quantum, you know, tunnel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the second episode was cool. I don't even want to say it because I don't want to give it away. But, yeah, you'll appreciate it. Trust me. You'll watch it and you'll go, oh, I wish I hadn't waited so long.
All right. I'll make it a point. But I definitely have to watch the second episode of Killing Eve. I'm assuming that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's called Management Sucks. And yeah, it's another one of those where she says that at one point, and just the episode's great.
I'm actually pissed at myself that I forgot to watch it. It just came back. That's going to be my defense to it. It just came back.
That's quite all right. I will say real quickly, I watched the second episode of that hashtag Black AF.
Another one I
want to
watch.
It's still funny. You got to check that out. I watched the second episode of Run, that one on HBO about the two people who just run away together.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The second episode was really slow until the very end. Like, they basically kind of argued about, like, she basically said, look, I came to get fucked, you know, fuck me now. And then they have very bad, awkward kind of trying to have sex and things go wrong in a train car. That was pretty cool. But then by the end, like, it ramps up dramatically. So I'm interested to see what happens from there. You probably didn't watch it, but there was a new episode of Superstore this week. It was, It was California Part 1, and it's basically setting up for Jonah and Amy to leave the store and the show, probably.
Oh, hold on. Jonah's leaving the store, too?
Well, yeah, they're dating. He's going to move in with her.
Two main characters on the show are going to leave the show.
Yeah.
And now we're just... Okay.
It, but think about it. They're also the two most annoying characters lately. So this could be a good thing.
True. I could enjoy it again after that, I guess. After this is all over, I guess.
Tacoma FD, this week... not Kevin Heffernan, Steve Lemmy, okay?
Yeah.
He plays Eddie Panisi, but if you look at his last name, it's spelled like Penisy.
Oh, cool. But,
you know, he's the ladies' man, and he's the suave guy. Eddie Panisi. His dad shows up. His dad is the fire commissioner. His dad is played by Joe Padaliano. You know,
cool.
Yeah, and he... kind of looks like he could be his dad, and it was pretty fucking cool. It's still a great show, and I did finish this week the third season of Ozark. I still really like this show. It's really dramatic, really dark, and I really enjoyed it. So, oh, and sorry, I did get a smattering of shows in this week. Apparently, I watched the first episode of that one that I told you about last week, Middleditch and Schwartz.
Yep.
The one where they basically do improv for an hour.
Yeah, how was that?
Dude, it's fucking funny as hell. I was literally laughing out loud. And like a lot of times when I watch a show, I'll be like, oh, that was funny. You know, I'm like Mandy Moore in Scrubs. I'll be like, oh, that was funny. Or, oh, huh. This one, I found myself literally laughing out loud at some of their stuff. Because each one of them is a different city that they're doing a show at. And it's about this one was like 52 minutes long total. And they come out on stage and they're like, look, you know, we're going to have a conversation with the audience and then we're going to do our show. And they ended up talking to this guy up in the balcony and he was there with a couple other people. And they were talking about how like he's part of the wedding for these people that were sitting next to him and that they're all friends that have met at different live music concerts. And, you know, the bride to be was like, yeah, all these people that are my friends, we've all met in Walmart parking lots. And it was trashy, but funny as hell the way that they did it. So then they did an improv thing about the wedding that's coming up and using some of the details that these people gave. But the thing is, it wasn't just like, yeah, there's just two guys and two chairs and they kept changing characters. Like, you know, at first it's the groom to be and one of the guys and they're talking and he's like, I want you to be my best man. But then like one of them would walk over to the other side of the stage and now he's a different character. And then this one. And it was so funny to watch some of the jokes that they'd come up with because it's all completely improv. And even they would forget sometimes, like he'd be like, have we even said my name yet? And no, I don't think you told me your name. Oh, my name's Michelle. Oh, okay, Michelle, how's it going? Or, you know, they'd be sitting there and they'd be like, and I've honestly forgotten what my name is. So we're just going to have to go from there. Wow, that must be very scary for you right now. If you like any kind of improv, you've got to check this out. These guys are fucking hilarious.
All right. Yeah, I will check it out.
All right. I think that tops off.
I'll add it to my list.
There's only three episodes. They're like 50 minutes each. So, yeah.
My ever-growing list.
Well, we were just saying that there's a lot of stuff that's going away, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is a lot of stuff going away, so it would be nice to have some more stuff to take a look at. Anyhow. Flash. So I watched Flash and thought, why the fuck am I watching this?
Yeah, they just keep bringing Ragdoll back for no fucking reason.
I watched Flash because I was like, all right, I'm going to watch Flash. I'm going to get back into it. And then went, fucking really? Like, Iris tells Eva that Barry's Flash. I know because, Iris doesn't know that Eva's evil, but why the fuck would she do that?
Yeah, pretty soon it's just going to be like a public identity instead of a secret identity because they just keep telling everyone.
Yeah, and then Eva tells Mirror Iris, which this was stupid. How the fuck does Mirror Iris not know that Barry's Flash by now? And right. Has reported it back. Right. Right. Tells her, hey, make sure Barry loses his speed. Okay. Because we got to make sure that happens again. I didn't care for this at all.
This whole mirror universe thing is dragging on way too long. I can appreciate having a villain that, you know, takes a lot of screen time and that has a lot of buildup. Yep. But holy God, this is just taking way too long to get to whatever ending they're going to eventually do. It's annoying as hell.
And there's way too many mirror people in this fucking show.
Yeah, now the captain of the police is a mirror people. Joe's gone into witness relocation because, you know, Ragdoll's trying to kill him.
Well, I understand the actor there, Jesse. All I can think of is James L. Brooks. It's not him. Jesse Martin. I understand he's got health issues. You know, I completely get why they have to take him off the show. I just didn't. It's not doing anything for me. It's really not. No. It's like I in a Flash used to be number one, and
oh yeah.
Well, Legends has been number one now for like 3 seasons that it's been on. But I'm just saying, Flash used to be number one.
Yep.
Speaking of Legends, wow, this is a heartbreaking episode.
This was rough, but it was great. But yeah, rough.
Oh. It was awesome. I mean, I loved the episode. I mean, I thought they did a great job with it. And, you know, we got to see, you know, like new Zari meet old Zari. It was a really good episode.
You know, because you have old Zari, who's basically now trapped inside the Windstone, you know, with all the ancestors. She kind of makes a joke about, you know, I thought there'd at least be video games in here. But, you know, she's kind of disheartened because she knew what was happening. So it wasn't even like we all saw her get blinked out of existence and thought, OK, well, it's just that the timeline's been reset and she never existed. Yeah. No, a version of her actually still exists.
And she's in the totem.
And knows what happened and knows that the legend saved the world, that as a result, she was never born. But she's very happy to find out that her parents and her brother are alive.
Until her brother's killed at the end of the episode. So.
Yeah. And not even just like, not even killed in like, oh, he got slashed or shot or something like that. But one of the fates actually pulls his thread out of his heart and severs it.
Yep. Yeah. You're not supposed to belong here. There'll be no more messing with fate type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fate got, and then I did get a little annoyed because one of her sisters, whatever, managed to get the two of the rings because the Legends had one, and then they retrieved that one, and she was pretending to be Constantine, and so she now has two of the rings, and they battled her all episode and couldn't die, or they couldn't kill her. And they, because they made her too super powerful. Yes, I get it. She's a god, but why do they have to make her a god?
Well, she's a fate. I mean,
yeah,
they basically oversaw every mortal's life. I kind of got that.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, I don't know. I guess maybe I can't think of the words I want to use right now. But maybe I'm just tired of these insurmountable odds that always get stacked against people because I'm just, you know, they're going to overcome them. And when they make them too over the top, it's just like, all right, this is absurd. Make it tough. I get it. But I'm a god. But then again, we're going to figure out a way to cut your hand off and so that you get sucked out into the time vortex there. And that way we can keep the rings. Like, I don't know. It's just.
Yeah. That what was interesting, like, Sarah survived seeing her true form.
Yeah, yeah, that was interesting. I wonder, do you think that has to do with her going into the Lazarus pit there?
Yeah, I don't know. But she asked Sarah, she's like, what are you? And then, you know, of course, Sarah has the quippy little, I'm the worst thing that you've ever met or something like that. But yeah, that was kind of interesting. I wonder if they're going to touch upon that later or if we're just supposed to say, yeah, she came back from the Lazarus pit. So
here's just the accept. Deal with this show. Give me, they have to be like Constructicons and unite to form giant Bebo to battle a demon, and I'm cool as hell with it. But make it so they have to fight a god every episode, and somehow at the last minute, you know, win for now, it just makes me roll my eyes. Okay, I just want to point that out. That's how wishy-washy I am, I guess.
Now, speaking of kind of heartbreaking, so yep. The other story that's going on in this is that Rory is trying to, like, he goes to be a dad to his daughter, who's, you know, a teenager at this point, and she basically tells him to pound sand. She's like, no, I don't yep. care. You're never around. Go F yourself. And so he gives up. He's like, fuck it, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
But then Ava's like, no, we can do this. We have a time machine. We can go back and, you know, you can be a dad. And he's like, no, I was in jail the whole time that she was a kid. Okay, well, let's find a creative way around that. I'll be your parole officer and you are a correctional officer and you're on, you know, work leave essentially to come out yep. and see your daughter at different points. And they really do some touching stuff. You know, they make sure that he's there for different things, like tooth and, you know, school stuff and teaching her soccer. But she still turns into a teenager who resents him because, you know, unfortunately, that's what teenagers do.
Yep, it is, unfortunately. Because when she actually, like, she gets mad at him because he would show up and then just abandon her over and over and over again in her eyes. Because he'd show up, see her for a bit, and then leave. And, like, I remember her saying, like, well, you know, I went into the store to get something. I came out and you were gone. I made mom wait there because you said you were going to be right back. And you yep. didn't come back type of thing, you know. So there's that aspect of it as well that kind of sucks.
And then there's also, like, the last time that he does go back to see her, he's like, well, I've been in jail. And she's like, not for the past 2 years. But that's when he was being a criminal. And that was before he knew that he had her, et cetera. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You know, essentially, that was the other him.
Yeah. But I do like how they did kind of reconcile a little bit at the end. You know, where she, like, they move out of the, like, he goes to leave and she sees the crib because he just came home from the hospital with the baby. And yep. she sees the crib. She's like, oh, did you do that? And he's like, yeah. You know, it's, you know, 17th century, like, 17th century, like, we have a corrects him and everything. And then he's like, all right, I guess you can come see your daughter. And, if you know, she passes him a granddaughter and everything. And then I think my favorite part, she goes, wait, did you guys break into my house? And that was the end of it. They cut away.
Still a great show.
Yeah. And Zari is all about helping Constantine find the faith, the last faith. Weave they need there, so that way she can bring her brother back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did find it funny when Zari met Zari, and the new Zari was like, you must be so disappointed in me. She's like, why? And, you know, like, well, because you did all these adventures and you're a hero and da 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 da, and I'm just kind of like a waste by comparison. So,
yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there was a lot of touching feeling in this episode.
Yep, there was. Love and touch and squeezing, you know? Each other. She's tearing me apart every day.
Oh, I got that one.
Oh, you got that one?
Yep, I picked up what you were putting down.
Oh, good, because I was picking up and putting down some journey. Yeah. Let's talk about brain scramblies.
their first ever superb owl party.
Yes. They get invited to Sean. Their neighbor Sean invites them over to a Super Bowl party, and
What we do with the shadows, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, what we do in the shadows, and they think it's the superb owl party, and apparently there's some sort of owl being, or I don't know that. It's somehow related to something from their days or vampire days. Do you remember how that, because they explained it so quickly. I really kind of wasn't paying attention.
It was just a quick gloss over. So
yeah,
no, I couldn't do it justice.
So they go over there to the party, and Sean mentions to his friends, yeah, you know, I never see these guys out during the day. They're only at night. There must be a couple of vampires. Ha, 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 ha. And Nandor and Laszlo's like, Nandor, come with me. And they or one or the other. And they go into the bathroom so they can talk about it because, you know, they now that they know he's vampire, they believe that he thinks they're vampires. So maybe we should kill him. Oh, we shouldn't do that. And then there's a knock on the door. We're both pooping in here. Okay. And so they decide they're going to double hypnotize him because that way he'll forget about them being a vampire. But of course they overdo it. So he loses all his memories and they get what they call the brain scramblies. And
Let's not forget too, that they decided to double hypnotize him. Then instead of just double hypnotizing him, they went and had to prove that they were vampires to him, which he didn't know that they were vampires until they both decided to like float up in the sky and hiss and,
that's right, because they're like, we know you were vampires. No, you guys aren't. Get the fuck out of here. I was just joking. You know, and he's like, what? No, we really are. Because now they have to see, well, you don't believe us that we're vampires? We really are. Oh, shit, you guys really are. Like, yeah, that's right. It was good. It was good. And so I like the segue, because Nadja meets Sean's mother, Joan, and apparently Nadja used to play with her when she was a child and make her do stuff or leave her on the roof and all these other things. And yep,
pin her to the ceiling and keep her there. And she tormented the kid constantly.
Oh, completely tormented her. And of course, now the woman's, they think she's senile or got Alzheimer's, dementia, whatever. So when she's telling them this, then no one believes her. And then when they get Nadja on, they tell what they did to Sean. Sean's like, well, you have to kill him. I can't kill Sean. He's my best friend. And so they decide to give him one last fun night, including Nadja flashing him before they kill him. And then he sees his wife and he's like, who's that hot lady over there? What? Who? Your wife? That's not my wife. I wish she was my wife. And so apparently after all of having the brain scrambles, it allowed him to be a better husband because he's in love with his wife again and wants to devote himself to her. So I think that's funny.
Yes. Yeah. So they let him be because he can't remember that they're vampires. And he's now going to basically worship his wife.
Yep. And Guillermo's backstory is he's trying to find them virgins. So he goes to the Mosquito Hunters Club or Mosquito Collectors Club. And which is that not Ron Funches? Who is that? Who's that guy?
Craig Robinson.
Craig Robinson is there. As well as a couple other faces you'll probably recognize. And Jenna's college roommate. And they reveal that they're not really mosquito hunters. They're actually vampire hunters. And I like Guillermo looking at the camera, talking, you know, doing his narrative. I know it may seem odd that I went looking for, some mosquito collectors club for virgins and I found a vampire hunters club. But, it was an accident, you know. Just feeding into as he thinks he's a vampire, hunter. That's his, because of his heritage and everything. So I thought that was friggin' hilarious. And apparently none of them have ever met a vampire except Shanice, who says that, my roommate was. And then
she got sick and really changed a lot.
And then I witnessed her die in front of me and then she came back to life. And I thought that part was funny when Guillermo was like, oh, apparently Shanice and I have a common friend.
Yeah. I also like that one of the group members of the Mosquito Collectors Club or Hunters Club or whatever keeps suggesting that they all have sex with each other so that they won't be virgins, so that vampires won't try to hunt them as virgins.
Yeah. And stops. You got to stop suggesting that. Okay.
Because the thing is, most of them are kids. Like, they're like teenagers or maybe, college age kids.
Yes, they most certainly are. I don't know. I just think it's hilarious. And Guillermo ends up leaving the group at the end because he realizes they don't really know what they're talking about or what they're doing. Oh, no, he's going to go leave. And they're like, they bust out the crossbow and they have some dummies dressed up as vampires with Halloween costumes. And Guillermo with one shot stakes them all.
Yep.
Because he's a bad MF-er.
Yes, he is.
I'm glad I finally watched all of season one. This is a hilarious show.
I love it. I love everything about it. It's just so much fun to. It's like a Monty Python kind of thing, but more modern. Yeah, it's great. I just love how they. And then at the end, they were so disappointed that they never saw the owl. Because, you know, it's Super Bowl, but they kept seeing it as Superb Owl.
Superb Owl, so yeah.
They were just moving the B over.
I think what makes it so good is that it's not like. In Monty Python or another like comical farce things like Hot Shots or Naked Gun, maybe not Naked, but like Hot Shots or National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1 or Scary Movie or all those ones, Shriek If I Know What You Did Last Summer or whatever, the actors aren't playing their characters. They're playing their characters like as a joke to them as well and goofy and over the top and slapsticky and this and that, whereas the actors in this are playing it seriously. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, exactly. When they do something slapsticky or funny, it's done in a serious manner. It just comes off as slapstick and funny. You know, they're not doing cheap jokes for cheap jokes. And when they do a cheap joke for a cheap joke, it doesn't get a laugh. You know, like the energy vampires,
Colin Robinson
kept trying to do. Yes, Colin Robinson. His updog joke he kept trying to do. And then when he finally pulled it off, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's really clever humor, and I enjoy the hell out of it.
I loved his part in the beginning of this where he basically told him, like, he goes to the camera and he's like, yeah, I tried to explain to them that it's not anything to do with an owl, it's the Super Bowl. And then they keep talking about it, and he's like, in all fairness, I didn't try very hard to convince them.
That's right, yeah. I like when he's messing up the kick, like, it's come on, man, they're gonna be kicking the ball off. Yeah, but you want to have the TV set to the right setting, because you're gonna want, you know. Again, it's hilarious, and the guy's kind of over the top about it, but he's playing it seriously at the same time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Which really makes it funny.
And I love that they've committed to calling him Colin Robinson constantly. Like, they never just call him Colin. It's always Colin Robinson.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Want to talk about Westworld?
Sure.
Because we got Westworld and Hunters, right?
Let me look at my list here.
Because we can't talk about Killing Eve. I gotta watch it.
Oh, what about Blacklist? You caught up on two episodes.
Yeah. Let's watch. We can. Okay. So I watched the one from this past Friday about the that was fucked up. Like, that actually felt like that might be a real thing. Where the guy, apparently, you know, where he milks dead people for their semen, and then he impregnates a hooker and then blackmails the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that was realistic.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, I bet you that probably might have happened. Niall Thatcher one. I thought that was really, really good. I enjoyed the hell. I mean, it was just, I don't know.
That was the one week before. What was it about again?
That was the most recent one. The one from the week before was a
that was the hooker one.
The week before was the one where Red witnesses an armed robbery where the cashier gets killed.
Oh yeah. I watched that and I was like, oh, this isn't that great. Mike's not going to like this.
Yeah.
It was essentially like they took a time out from the regular Blacklist episodes to do political one.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's exactly what they did. And then Red goes off and finds Ilya, and guess what? He's having some post-traumatic stress issues after being tortured.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't care for the Gordon Kemp episode very much at all. No, I didn't at all. But I really dug the Nile Hatcher one. That was like, whoa, shit. So he's a guy, he's a coroner who works for these emergency, like, critical response things. So he goes to different states and he, for instance, goes to like a plane crash. And then he, once all the bodies are released, he finds someone on, you know, if he finds somebody that's affluent of some kind, he will somehow get their sperm out of them, which they didn't go into detail there. And I'm thankful for that because I've never considered, because apparently sperm's still good for 36 hours after you die. And then he will impregnate a prostitute, letting them know, hey, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get pregnant. You're going to have this baby and we're going to blackmail the family because they can do a DNA test and see that, it's that person's kid. And then he tells them to drop the baby off at a, like a firehouse or a hospital for that, yep. You know, no questions asked thing. And then meet him someplace secluded so he can give them their cut of the money. And then he murders them. And then because he's a mortician, he then goes and buries them like 4 feet down in a fresh grave. But yeah. To make it even more fucked up, he drugs them so that they're still alive. They just can't fight back or do anything. They're like kind of paralyzed or whatever. So he buries them alive. Like, if there wasn't already enough boxes checked off that what this guy's doing is fucked up, let's check off that one. He doesn't even have the decency to kill them before he buries them. He buries right. them alive.
And Elizabeth even says that it's because he doesn't want them to die or something like that. It was like, yeah. it was like he's yeah. doing them a service.
Yeah.
By burying them alive.
Yeah. So that guy's 10 levels of fucked up.
100 levels.
That was a good story. I could have seen that being almost like an X-Files episode or a Criminal Minds. Sorry, not X-Files, Criminal Minds episode.
Yeah, I could see that.
See, that's a show I haven't watched in a long time. But yeah, I could definitely see this story being more of a Criminal Minds type episode than a Blacklist episode. So. Only got a couple more episodes this season.
Yeah,
for this show.
Again, gonna be going away soon.
Yep. Be another one. We're wrapping things up. So you want to do Westworld then Hunters?
Sounds good.
So Westworld, episode 6. Only 2 more to go. And this week's episode, we get we get William's story. We get Maeve's story, and we get Charlotte's story, correct?
Yes.
Those are the 3 main characters. So Charlotte's story, I think, is the biggest one in the episode. So William's story, I think, is the least one in the episode. He's basically in the insane asylum, and he goes to his therapy sessions and his group sessions, and they aren't going well. And then essentially he goes and meets with his therapist one-on-one. And while he's talking to her, he reveals that he shot his daughter and he has a big, huge fucking revelation of what's going on in his mind. Right.
Yes.
But she's too busy looking at her phone because the timing of this meeting is when they released all that information to people and on her phone, because I did pause it to read it. And it said that essentially in 1 to 2 years, she's going to lose her medical license. Because of in 1 to 2 years she'll lose her medical license, and in 2.5 years she'll be divorced from her husband because of all her affairs with her patients, which caused her to lose her medical license.
Yeah.
And she gets a text from her husband that says, "I'm taking the kids, don't come looking for us."
Well, her phone kept ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing, and she's like, I'm sorry, my family knows not to call me. And it was her husband trying to call her to basically say what he said in the text later.
Yeah. And then she, you know, and because we get the close-up of William, you know, of Ed Harris there, and it's just going in and in and in as he's talking and telling. And then he finishes, and you keep expecting some sort of, like, reaction from her or advice or whatever, and then she starts crying. I was like, whoa, she was moved by what he said. And then it cuts to her and she's not even in the fucking chair. She's standing up looking at her phone crying. And that's when we see all that. And then she's like, I'm sorry, I have to go. And she leaves. And then they take William out and then they go put one of those implants in his mouth. Like we saw earlier Caleb had.
Did you cringe a little bit when those drills popped out and drilled right into the top of it?
Yes, I did. Yeah, and then when they're dragging, and then they strap William in a chair, and he somehow fights through the hallucination, and then they come in to drug him, and I guess they don't inject people to sedate them, they give him a pill, because how else is he going to bite the guy's fucking fingertip off? And then as they're hauling him off to his padded room, he goes by, and he looks through a window that's into office, and you see feet standing on the desk, and then they just walk off the edge, and a girl's hung herself, and we don't see the face, but you know it's his therapist there that just got the bad news from her husband. And it's like, holy shit. And then William's in the cell, basically. Like, then he has a hallucination group meeting with different versions of himself, with a child version of himself, with the young William who just goes to the park for the first time, and then William in his gear at the park, in his Westworld outfit, and then William in a tuxedo, and then his partner or father-in-law or whatever it was from, what was there as well. And well, let's just say that group session doesn't go well because it ends with him killing everybody but the kid.
Right.
Beating him all to death.
Brutally, too. Beating them mercilessly.
And William kind of gets pulled out of his daze because Bernard's there with Ashley. And they're like, during all the chaos, they must have just left him in here type of thing. So that's how his story ended.
Yeah.
Because this data coming out definitely caused some chaos.
Yep.
Maeve wakes
he's
up.
Still got that. Go ahead. He's still got something inside of him. We saw when he hallucinated Dolores when he was first committed, that she reached up and pressed a finger to his neck. And Charlotte says at one point, the tracker that you put on the target has given us data.
Yes.
Don't know if it's him or not, but you have to assume. And then when he's getting fitted for the mouth thing, there's that screen that flashes up that says unknown protein detected. Data transfer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. That's right. That's right. So, I don't know. Maeve's story, she wakes up in War World, and that was kind of unsettling. She basically makes everyone put their guns down, tells everyone innocent to run, and then she kills them one at a time, the Nazis.
Yeah.
And hand to hand. And then, essentially, what happens is Serac, in the meantime, basically makes his power play and takes over Delos.
Yep.
And Charlotte Dolores as Charlotte kind of goes into action because Serac is like, hey, there's a mole here and we need to find out who it is. There's not a mole, there's a host. And so Charlotte heads out to try to find the host. And then at the same time, Serac wants to save a few of the host data and then delete everything else. So Charlotte goes and downloads all the data, gets caught, kills the guy. And then, of course, Serac finds out that Charlotte is the host. And so she goes into her offensive. Well, in the interim, going back real quick because it kind of explains something, Maeve and her pearls get transferred to Delos. And she can realize that they're there. And now she has Hector back as Hector. She's able to go in and give him all his memories. Now Hector's Hector again.
For 5 seconds.
Yeah, for 5 seconds. And then they meet up with, and then also Serac had found a damaged Dolores pearl. And so he hooks it into the Delos computer so Maeve can go down and talk to her. And Maeve's trying to find out, what's the key? Where's my daughter? Can you help me get there, etc.? And it's funny because this Dolores doesn't know what the other Doloreses are doing. She's not linked to them because she's an earlier version. But she knows. But this is kind of a good little human chess game where, Maeve kind of shows some of her hand. You're not you. You're out there. And So this Dolores is like, well, we must be, you know, like basically like she's deducing like, well, we must be fighting against each other. Well, geez, you know, I would have done this. And I, you know, like this Dolores is kind of not revealing what the other Dolores has done. But she's like, well, this is what I would have done without giving away a lot of details. But then you see it with the flashes of what Charlotte's doing. So it was really interesting.
Yes, absolutely.
And then Charlotte takes Hector's pearl and crushes it. So he's dead, gone forever type of thing. And then she grabs the Dolores pearl that's hooked to the machine, and she takes off. And this, what's funny is this Charlotte has got some affection for her son. And she even asked Dolores at one point, well, why did you leave those feelings into us? Because, you know, it really messes everything up. And the fact that she has affection for her son and called and checked on her son was the tell to Sarek that that wasn't the real Charlotte, because that real the real Charlotte never cared about her kid that much or her husband or anything. And it's just like, how cold was that woman? You know?
Yep.
The real one.
Yeah. Apparently so she was an ice queen.
Yeah. Yeah. So ultimately with Maeve's story is she has a new body now. Like our new body that's been built, and she's now in her body is what we see. And while she's standing there after as she's just come out of the goo or whatever, and her pearls in her brain and all this other stuff, did you see who the other body was that was being made?
No, and it really bothered me because I wanted to know who it was.
Okay, good, because I'm like, did I forget something or did they not show us? Because I don't think they showed us.
I'm wondering if it's going to be another Maeve.
Oh, that'd be different. Charlotte, Dolores Charlotte in the interim, goes and gets her husband and kid, and well, after she fights her way out of Delos and kills a bunch of people and activates one of those protection robots and everything, she goes home to get her husband and kid. And is like, we need to get out of here. We need to go. No one will find us, et cetera, et cetera. They start driving down the road and the fucking car blows up. And I was like, oh shit, that sucks. You know,
yeah.
Killed her husband, killed Charlotte, you know, Charlotte Dolores, whatever. And then like the graphic, creepy door busts open on the upside down vehicle on fire and burnt up. Charlotte starts crawling across the ground. And her skin is charred and her clothes is burnt and all her hair is burnt off. And that was fuck, right?
Yeah. And I kept looking because I'm like, they just showed us the face with no hair, no eyebrows, no eyelashes, no nothing. And it was just the head. So I kept looking. I'm like, is that Charlotte or is that supposed to be her kid? But no, it's Charlotte.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely Charlotte. You know, it was just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a very powerful episode. A lot happened in this episode. And there was only two left. I mean, you know, it's coming to a head very quickly.
I guess the next episode is all about Caleb's backstory, finally.
All right.
Because, you know, we need to know who he is. They've really alluded to the fact that he is more than what he thinks he is, more than what we know him to be. So it's about time.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is about time that we learn more about him.
Yeah.
Did you... All right, so when you watched Hunters, did you sit down and watch him back-to-back?
For the most part. I watched the first episode and went, wow. Holy crap. And then I got about 5 minutes into the second one, and I was like, I was starting to fall asleep a little bit. So I was like, okay, I got to stop. I'll watch this one later because I didn't want to like half watch it. I wanted to give it all the attention that I could.
Yeah.
But then the next day I got right into it.
So I really, these last two episodes, you didn't have to watch them back to back, you know? But episode 9, The Great Old Nazi Cookout of 77, it was interesting. It really showed it tells the story as to why they brought the Nazis here to the U.S. because if they didn't do it, then the Soviets would have. I'm sorry, I got hiccups. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't say anything.
No, I have hiccups now. You have to talk.
Oh, okay. So basically, this episode, episode 9, is where they decide that they're going in. They're going to stop. The nun there has talked to her friend, and her friend's like, well, if it's a virus, if you could put it in at least 500 degrees, then you could essentially kill the virus. You would cook it. They wouldn't even know. but the problem is that, you know, you'd have to get it all. So they decide they're going to go into the factory where the corn syrup and the virus are being mixed together, and they're going to destroy it. But the entire place is absolutely 100% filled with Nazis. So they have to devise a plan where, and this was a weird thing for me. You know, they found one of the guys who is a delivery driver, or he's a technician there. And they're like, we have to replace him. You know, we've got him, we've got to replace him and send somebody in his place. And Meyer's like, you know, boy, guess we need like somebody to really act the part. We need an actor. And like, they had to convince Lonnie. Lonnie has gone in and done acting for these things multiple times so far. Like, why? Maybe if this had been the first episode, but it just seemed really weird where they're like, seems like we might need an actor. Do we know anybody like that? And then Lonnie's like, oh, damn it. Why? But I guess maybe it's because Lonnie was scared that, you know, this whole place is filled with Nazis. And, you know, he's been shanked once already. He's probably not looking forward to round two. But they basically come up with a plan where Jonah is going to go in there and he's going to set up the bombs. And Lonnie is going to tamper with the controls so that essentially they're going to cap the tea kettle so that the pressure builds up and it's going to explode. And they don't want to just cook off the virus. They want to destroy the whole factory. They want to destroy everything that's in there and kill all the Nazis while they're in there. So, of course, you know, as these things do tend to go, it doesn't go according to plan. The radio cuts out while Mindy's trying to talk to Lonnie, and so he doesn't get the full instructions, and he does the best that he can, but then he ends up out on the floor, and the colonel comes down. She's there with the American guy, who, by the way, the American-German guy there, you know, the American Nazi, goes about singing a song while using a chainsaw to chop up the other one that he killed, the guy that he was supposed to be working side by side with, who claims he's better than him. So, yeah, he sings a song, chops his body up, and then basically goes back to the colonel, and he's like, she's like, you returned. He's like, yep, and he didn't. So that shows you how good I am. And she's like, yep, you're right. You're my new number one type. So anyway, they're now down on the floor, and he recognizes Lonnie because, you know, he shanked him and he's been following him around. Lonnie improvises, pretends he has a bomb in his satchel, and, you know, tries to hold them all back. And fortunately for him, the alarms start going off because the pressure is rising on the corn syrup mixture. And so all the Nazis start fleeing to the bomb shelter. You know, they've got a bunker down there that's going to protect them. And meanwhile, Joe has come in to do backup. He had been out drilling holes in all of the semis trailer tires. Awesome. You know, none of this stabbing them with a knife. No, power drills, him and Roxy power drilling all the tires, getting holes in them. And, you know, making sure that those trucks aren't going to be transporting anything anywhere. So he gets the call that Lonnie's in trouble. So he runs in there, and Joe is a fucking badass. Like, that was my note that I wrote down. Joe is a badass. Like, he goes in there dual wielding submachine guns and just friggin' lights people up. You know, we got John Wick style stuff where he's sliding. He's, you know, taking guns away from this one and this one. And, essentially, the American gets away, but Jonah starts chasing him. The Nazis all get melted. Like the high pressure corn syrup starts coming out of the pipes and everything. And we get something out of like an 80s leaking. Horror movie.
Yeah, it was gross. It was yeah.
Like their faces are all melting.
They're Nazis.
Yeah, exactly. But still, there are some things that, like, even when they're bad people, you're like, oh. Like, I still remember there was one of the Hellraiser movies where we got a close-up. Like, somebody had hammered a nail halfway into the wall so they could hang, like, a jacket on it or something like that. And it was, like, in a doorway. And these two guys were moving a mattress. And one of them, like, and I'm not even talking the pointy part of the nail. I'm talking the head of the nail where you hammer it. The head of the nail, like, snagged on the back of his hand and, like, ripped the flesh right down to the finger. Just some things that it's like, bleh. And in this case, watching, you know, molten corn syrup splash down and erode the faces of Nazis, that was just a bit much.
Yep, that's gross.
Yeah. So all these people are getting away. Jonah catches up with the American and, you know, holds a gun on him. And basically the American's like, yeah, you're not going to do anything. They fight a little bit. Jonah gets the drop on him. But then, of course, the FBI agent, you know, I'm sorry, I forgot. She had the senator. She knows that the senator and that his contact that he was dealing with are both Nazis. And she is... she's got him arrested. She's got the senator arrested. She took out his partner and she shows up at the factory and sees all the chaos. So she takes off to go get Jonah and leaves him there to escape because, you know, she's dumb and he's smart. But yeah, she shows up to Jonah's little standoff there and basically says, your grandmother wouldn't want this. She wouldn't want you to do this. Actually, she would. Like she started the hunt. Like, she wanted Nazis dead. But anyway, so she's like, oh, don't dishonor your grandmother. You'll dishonor her memory if you kill this guy. And so he lets him go so that he can go to jail. And meanwhile, the colonel gets away in her limo. But then we see that Meyer is the one that's driving it. And he basically tells her, you know, that he's going to fuck her up. She's going to plan
for the mistake of doing the prologue.
Yes, he does. And she takes out a letter opener, carves into the seat under her, pulls out a gun because, you know, you just sew those into the lining of the seats just in case. And
Nazis, you do.
I guess so. Yeah, fair point. And she basically draws down on him and shoots, and he veers off the road. Of course, they were going onto a bridge at the time and drives right into the water. The nun collects him, you know, drags him back out of the water because for some reason she was right there. That was a little bit.
Yeah, she was nearby when it happened.
Yep.
Which
so,
doesn't make any sense.
No, but she was able to get right in there and drag him out so that he lived. They all assume that the colonel is dead. Come on, she's a villain. Of course she's not going to be dead if you see her die off screen, you know?
Right.
And I think that's pretty much how the first episode ended.
Yes. Yeah, that's pretty much how the first one ends. Because the second one, episode 10, picks right up with the nun there, Harriet, pulling Meyer out of the car.
Yep.
And pulling him to shore. And then makes her secret phone call saying that the colonel's dead, et cetera, et cetera. And then Meyer and Jonah have like kind of a big fight, if you will.
Yes.
Which was odd, but they did. And then, so Jonah kind of gets in his mind that he's going to find the wolf.
Well, the
wolf still got to be out there.
The fight that they have is because, you know, Meyer wakes up from his crash, and he's very weak and he's in a hospital bed. And Jonah's like, hey, you know, are you okay? But trying to take care of him. And Meyer basically tells him, you're a fucking pussy because you should have killed him. That's what we are here for.
That's what the fight was about. Yeah, he let him go get arrested instead of killing him.
And he even went so far as to tell him, he's like, I thought you were going to lead the hunt. You know, and he goes through, he's like, Lonnie's too much of a dip, and Joe has ghosts, and Roxy's unreliable, yeah, and Mindy's checked out. So he basically runs down, and he goes, you were supposed to run it, but you know what? You can't even do this. You suck. You're a terrible person, blah, blah. Like, just berates the shit out of him and tells him he's a useless piece of shit.
Yeah, not a real nice thing. Real grandfatherly thing to be talking to your grandson about, especially the one that you dragged into this, but that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So that's why Jonah's like, well, I'm going to find the wolf. So he goes back, finds, eventually, you know, searching his aunt's house or his grandmother's house, finds her files. And we get a good montage of him finding the files and this and that and everything. And then basically she's like, she found the wolf, and it's this doctor, because the wolf transferred all kinds of money, or had transferred all kinds of money from his name into this other person's name. I can't think of the last name now.
Well, don't forget, before that, we had a flashback of late life Safta, you know, grandmother, and her going back.
He's reading a letter. Right.
Yeah, so that's right. She met up with Meyer, and essentially, she was like, we had a daughter together, and he's like, I know, and she's like, did you know that she's dead? Yes, I know. And she's like, why did you walk out on us? You know, they had this whole big thing where she basically said, you know, you were supposed to be the one that I lived with, and you took off. You said you were different, but, you know, it's, you still could have been with me. And he's like, you know, I killed all those people, blah, blah, blah. So we basically got to see the two of them, how they started the hunt.
Yeah. You're right. She tells a story how she saw the Nazi there at the farmer's market, if you will.
While Jonah was with her.
Yeah, and then went to Meyer to talk to him. It's like, why did you leave us? Like, why'd you walk away that night? And then while Jonah's reading, she's reading some letters. She kind of reads a letter about when, after they had been liberated from the camp by the Soviets, and then they are now at this like tent city that they were staying at for now, you know, Meyer kept having the same nightmare every single night. And then they have a big talk, and basically Meyer's nightmare is that he wants to find the wolf and kill him. And he says he's going to say a prayer first. And he said, and she's like, why would you say the prayer? And he's like, because if anyone needs to have a prayer said before, it's this guy, blah, blah, blah. And so that's also the night where he disappears, or the night after that, somewhere around that same time, he disappears. Where basically, in Ruth's mind, he just got up and walked away and left, and she didn't see him again for 30 years, type of thing. So in the interim, she finds this surgeon who used to be an SS surgeon that she thinks that is the wolf. And she has an appointment with him, but doesn't end up going because she's murdered. So Jonah makes an appointment, and we go meet him, and Jonah brings a gun with him. And the wolf is looking at his arm. Because remember, he got the laceration on his arm, and his and Meyer sewed his arm up for him. And so the wolf is looking at his arm, and he's like, basically, like, all right, this seems weird to me. His whole thing he did was just remove stitches.
Yeah. Yeah. But basically, Jonah was like, he wanted a consult because he didn't want it to be a scar. And this guy was like, well, we can do stuff to make sure that. But it was already healing pretty well.
Yeah. And he removed the stitches, and he's like, yeah, no, that's not going to scar. That's going to be just fine. You don't have to worry about it. And the nurse walks in. So Jonah was going to kill him, but he doesn't. He follows him home. Knocks him out. Well, follows him to his car, knocks him out, and then he brings him to Meyer's house. And he tells Meyer, hey, I proved myself to you. I found out who the wolf was, and I caught the wolf. And Meyer goes and sees him, and of course the wolf is gagged and bound and this and that, and Meyer kills him, you know, stabs him in the back of the neck, you know, down into his body, and kills him, you know. And Jonah's like, you didn't say the prayer. Meyer's like, what? You didn't say the prayer. What are you talking about? I read in my socialist letter, whatever, that you had said that if you ever found the wolf, you were going to kill the wolf. You were going to say the prayer and blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, we get kind of like the big flashbacks to other episodes, things that are said, his arm, da, 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 da. And Jonah comes to the conclusion that Meyer's the wolf. Which, I mean, did that blow your fucking socks off or what?
You know, earlier in the series, we had had that one. Remember the woman that they were force feeding the horse shit to?
Yes. Yes. And so I knew something was going to be going on.
Yeah, but I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to happen either.
It was pretty intense. And then for him to just basically be like, yep, you got me.
Yeah. Oh, you did it. You got me. Yeah, and he just basically admits, like, yeah, I'm the wolf.
I thought we would have had a bit more time, but yeah, here we go.
Yeah, I'm the wolf, and yeah, I did get off my money to that guy because he was that guy that what he just killed was a plastic surgeon that changed Meyer's appearance to make him look from the wolf to the way he looks. I'm going to keep calling him Meyer's, by the way, the wolf or whatever. And yeah, he lived his life. And he for 30 basically years, he lived his life.
Yeah, he said that what happened was he knew that he was fucked. You know, the Russians had taken over, and he knew that he was never going to survive. So he went and found the real Meyer and fucking straight up murdered him and then laid down in his bed and took over his life, you know, and got to look like him. And he did it originally just to escape, you know, just to get out of the camp alive, to get away from the friggin' Soviets and to survive.
Yeah, that's what he did, which is crazy if you think about it.
It's psychopathic.
Yeah. So he takes over Meyer. He said he converted to Judaism. And he learned Hebrew and everything, and he, you know, he's been Jewish, living Jewish for 30 years, going to church, celebrating. You know, Ruth came to him, and Ruth inspired him to his penance for what he did. This is how he views it. His penance for what he did was to hunt down and kill these other Nazis.
Yep. So he considers like that he's repaying his debt for everything that he did.
Yep.
Which didn't even sound that convincing when he said it.
No, it didn't. It didn't sound that convincing at all.
He's basically just making up an excuse for himself.
Yeah, basically. So it's just it's kind of crazy in the long run. It's kind of knuckin' futz. So then Jonah has a vision, I guess, of his aunt. Telling his grandmother, to talk him out of it. But he kills Meyer. He kills the wolf, Zux, there. And then tells the other hunters, who oddly believe him rather quickly. Did you find that as well?
Some of them do. Some of them do, but some of them, like Lonnie, flips a nut. Yeah. Mindy kind of, like, that was the breaking point for Mindy. You could kind of see her go a little bit nuts. Sister Harriet, she seemed fine. You know, she was pissed, but she seemed fine. And Joe just left. Like, he just walked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did seem to, it did seem like that they were okay with it, or that they, you know, they just accept. I mean, they would have had to see the body, obviously, but for them to just be like, oh, so this guy was really the wolf all along? Well, that fucking sucks.
Basically, yeah. Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I enjoyed it.
So then we have some wrap-up.
Oh, there's more. Oh, yes, God, yeah, there's a lot more. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot more. So everyone kind of like starts wrapping up a little bit. Joe gets plowed by a car. He's walking across the street and gets absolutely fucking cremated by a car. And two guys jump out and throw him in the back seat. And because it's the 70s, people are like, yeah, whatever, you know, sucks to be him, but nobody really like screams or tries to call the cops or whatever. And if we just want to stick with that, that was the most fucked up, like bizarre twist. I don't get why they took him, but essentially we don't see Joe again for a little while. Go ahead.
They do kind of say, but keep going.
So basically when we see him again, he's in this very nice, almost like a plantation. You know, he's been driven out into a jungle type thing. And
but he's in Argentina.
Yes, Argentina, South America. And very nice plantation house. And who comes out but the colonel with a couple little scratches on her face, but looking pleasant. And she kind of like runs a finger down his face. She's like, do you know what you look like? You look like tomorrow. And tomorrow is a brand new day. Mm-hmm. And then they take him and sit him at this table where these four identical Aryan looking little twats come running up. I mean, those kids had to be what, 10, 11 years old?
Something like that.
They look like identical quadruplets.
They all look like clones.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're all blonde haired and blue eyed and they sit down and there's this big feast of, you know, fresh fruits and stuff like that. And then Adolf Hitler comes out with super white hair and a white mustache. And they sit him right across from Joe. And he says, you know, oh, I'm so hungry. I'm so very hungry. And that's kind of where it ends.
For we find out the colonel is Eva Braun.
Yes. Yeah. And that's pretty fucked up. So we've got Eva Braun and Adolf Hitler. And this is, like you said, they look like they could be clones, you know, the boys. So.
And when Joe sees Eva, she basically says something like, his killing skills or whatever it is the reason why he's there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Guess I missed that part. His
abilities. So
they're basically going to try to reprogram him.
I think so, yeah. But here's the other thing. So after Jonah tells Zux, you know, that he kills everyone, that Meyer was the wolf and everything, Harriet's just like, well, you know what we need to do? We need to go to England and hunt Nazis there in Europe.
Because her contact gave her a dossier. Basically, her contact is manipulating her and wants them over there.
Yeah. So it's going to be Jonah, Lonnie, Harriet, of course, and apparently Roxy's just going to leave her kid and husband go to Europe, I guess?
Yeah, that seemed really weird, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And then... I can't think of her name now, but the old lady there, Carol Kane's character.
Yep.
She's not going, apparently.
Yep.
Nope. She's moved to go be with her kids.
Yeah, she's gone to be with her kids. And they said that they said Joe's apartment was cleaned out, so they figure he just up and left.
Yep. So do you think, I mean, has this been renewed for season two yet?
I believe it has, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good show. I'm looking forward to season two.
I thought it was great. I really hope, though, that with season two, because you know how it is lately, like shows, a lot of shows will definitely get a season two, but then they don't necessarily get a season three. So I'm really hoping that season two doesn't end on a cliffhanger like this. I don't know. I really liked it. I thought this was great. Some of it kind of went a little over the top. Oh, we got to remember this too. Hold on. As of right now, it has not been renewed officially. So the American was sitting in jail and his parents, like the FBI lady, tried to get him to, you know, basically do a deal. She said, you know, if you can help us bring in other people, then we can do leniency type of thing. His parents came in to see him and they were like, we raised you right. We did this. We did this. And he kind of breaks down a little bit and then says that he wants a lawyer and maybe get one of those Jews because I hear that they're really good. Almost like he's, you know, a little scared to be in there and repentant. So he gets a Jewish lawyer and essentially he tells the guy, he's like, yeah, when you're in prison like this, it's great. There are other people like me who are white supremacists. And the only thing is that they don't just take anybody in off the street. You got to earn their respect. You got to earn their trust. And I don't just want to be part of them. I want to lead them. So I got to do a big display. And he has a shiv that he has made and he pulls it out and he murders his Jewish lawyer in front of everybody. Because of course, you know, it's a cage that's in the middle of a area where a bunch of prisoners are. And he like brutally murders him to basically prove a point and show his dominance. And all the prisoners start going crazy and he starts chanting, the Jews will not replace us. The Jews will not replace us. And they all start chanting it as well. So, yeah, he's going to be king of prison for a while, I guess.
Yeah, he murders the hell out of him.
Like so much of this show, it was quite brutal.
Oh, very brutal, very over the top. Very, very over the top. But yeah, yeah, he fucking murders the fuck out of that guy.
Yep.
So, yeah, so that's the other big, I guess, going forward for the next season is that storyline as well.
Yep. So.
Well, did you have any news you wanted to share?
I have a couple of news items that I wouldn't mind sharing. Like I said, no trailer this week because really wasn't anything going on. Blumhouse is making a Firestarter reboot.
Okay.
I was surprised when I read that. They didn't have a lot of details, just that they've acquired the rights, so they're going to be doing a reboot of it. Okay.
This will be the third round of Firestarter. We've already had two.
So maybe this one will be good. I don't know. Just I like Blumhouse. I like a lot of the Blumhouse stuff lately. So,
I'm a big fan. Absolutely.
Westworld has been officially renewed for a fourth season.
Okay.
So that's cool.
That is good to know.
You know that animated Harley Quinn show that's on the DC Universe?
Everyone seems to love. Yeah.
That's going to be coming to the Sci-Fi Channel soon. I believe in May.
That'll be edited thoroughly.
That's what I was thinking. As soon as I read that, I'm like, wow, they're going to edit the fuck out of that. Mm-hmm. But I guess if that's what they want to do, I'll still check it out, though.
Yep. Same.
And so there's a new show coming out. Netflix acquires Enola Holmes. That's E-N-O-L-A Holmes. Stranger Things' Millie Bobby Brown and The Witcher's Henry Cavill are staying in the Netflix family. Legendary Entertainment announced today that Netflix has acquired global rights, excluding China, to Enola Holmes. Based on Nancy Springer's Edgar Award-nominated book series, The Enola Holmes Mysteries, Enola Holmes sees Brown playing the title character, the younger sister of Sherlock Holmes, played by Cavill. Enola Holmes tells the story of Sherlock and Mycroft Holmes' rebellious teenage sister, Enola, a gifted super sleuth in her own right who often outsmarts her brilliant siblings. When her mother mysteriously disappears on her 16th birthday, Enola seeks out help from her older brothers, but soon realizing they're less interested in solving the case than in packing her off to finishing school, Enola does the only thing a smart, resourceful, and fearless young 1880s woman can do. She runs away to London to find her. Could be interesting.
Yeah, that does sound very interesting.
But this award winner Harry Bradbeer directs Enola Holmes from a screenplay adaptation penned by Jack Thorne. Jack Thorne did Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Okay, whatever. But the director, was also the director of Fleabag and Killing Eve.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's got some good stuff. It's also going to have Helena Bonham Carter. Let's see. Fiona Shaw.
Yeah.
I'll be interested. I'll check it out at least. And then,
yeah, I'll definitely check that out. I mean, I'm a fan of the actress in it, and the movie sounds good.
And Henry Cavill's awesome.
Henry Cavill is awesome.
After seeing him as like Superman and the guy in the Mission Impossible movie and then The Witcher, it's going to be odd to see him then be Sherlock Holmes.
Yep. Yep, it is. But again, I'll watch it.
And then, of course, the last news story, which was the best of the week, is the one that I sent you because it was just too good to wait all week on, which is that Leverage is coming back.
Oh, I know. I'm so excited for that. Not the whole cast, but majority of the cast.
Timothy Hutton won't be there. And that's a two-part reason. One is because he retired at the end of the show. And two is because in real life, he's still facing some sexual harassment claims.
Yep, and that would look bad.
Yep, but everybody else is going to be the same, and they're bringing in Noah Wiley.
I like him.
It's going to be interesting because this is going to be an IMDb TV production.
Right.
And this is going to be one of their first series on IMDb. Which I just, if you haven't seen Leverage, after they announced this, Amazon went on to say, oh, and by the way, if you have Amazon Prime, you can go and stream all episodes of Leverage right now. I really recommend that everybody does this. This show is great. Modern Robin Hoods, you know, there's always a heist. It's like Ocean's 11, but funnier and cuter. And every week there's a new heist. And they basically just, they try to help the downtrodden and they help people who can't help themselves and take on villains. I mean, yes, in the later seasons, some of the cons and heists got over the top ridiculous. I mean, some of the stuff you're like, come on, there's no way they could have done this. But
yeah,
it was great. What a great show. And it really, you should check it out.
I agree. It's one of the shows I really enjoyed when it was on. And it was one of the ones also that was kind of shitty when it went off the air, but I'm excited to see that get a revival.
Yes, I am too. It's a 13 episode order so far. Maybe it'll go for more. I'm just happy that they got the rest of the crew. You know, that's just, it's awesome.
Nice. Yeah, that's definitely the best news this week.
but otherwise, that's all I got.
I don't really have anything. So I guess we'll call it the end of the show.
Cool.
On the Twitter machine, I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
I'll talk to you later.
Maybe next week.
Probably.
Yeah.